Yeah, just keep it like...
Oh, it's an SM7B. Okay,
yeah,
yes.
So one of my buddies, he's like, he's a big musician. He like got signed Universal Motown.
Nice.
He told me.
You said Motown?
Yeah, Motown.
Oh, sick.
Yeah.
So he's an actual musician.
He's a real musician.
Yeah.
Before Motown Prep. But, dude, that was years ago. Are you an old Sini Weenie type of dude?
Old what?
Sini Weenie type of dude?
No.
No?
I mean...
Punk music and shit?
So I'm a musician as well.
Yeah.
Like most things I like, though, I don't know enough about the industries behind it most times, like at all. Like I grew up playing guitar, and like I'm horrible with like, oh, you know this guitarist, and like maybe, I don't know. Yeah.
Who the lead singer is or the lead guitarist?
Yeah. Yeah. No. So I mean, I know a decent amount about the music industry, but. I don't know much, but I know that for a while I played in like a little gypsy jazz band, like a little quartet, and like they kind of started playing more funk and we'll call it like Motown gospel kind of stuff. And I am not good enough to keep up with some of those guys, dude. That, I mean, they are musicians. Thanks. I appreciate it. Thanks.
You posted either a story or, yeah, you posted a story, right?
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, break it out. I dropped out of high school, and I kind of like grew up in a really musical family. Like,
you dropped out of high school?
Yeah, I dropped out right after freshman year. I went to like 2 days of my sophomore year, and I was like, this sucks. I just left. I legit left. The cool thing about when your parents are divorced and it's like toxic is like you can kind of just get away with whatever you want. So I just played that game and dropped out, dude. I feel so bad for them. I was such a horrible kid.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Okay, so before we get into that, that's obviously a huge story.
Mm-hmm.
The whole point why when I was bringing it up, supposedly these are the mics that Michael Jackson recorded Thriller.
Yeah. Supposedly. Yeah.
So anyway.
I mean, sure has kept the music afloat forever.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Okay, dude, you dropped out of high school.
Yeah. Well, I told my dad it was to get started on college early. So I had a 4.0. I was playing football. Like, I was athletic, but I was growing up. I grew up in Oceanside, California, and surfing is just so much better than doing two-a-days and getting. No, like so, skate was more just like I would skate with my friends, but I like the risk reward. I was like real kind of nerdy and like intellectual on the low key, and I was like. This risk is not worth looking dope. Like, it looks sick, but, like, if I do more than just ollie, I'm going to break my tailbone, and I'm not sure it's worth it. But surfing, I grew up in the water, and, like, I really just took to it when I was, like, 11 or 12. And after that, I was like, dude, this is so much better than football and two-a-days and getting freaking just smashed every day and, like, CTE and all that stuff. So, but, yeah, I dropped out and ended up just really pursuing day drinking. And music. Like,
okay.
So like, at one of them. No, so I had some success in music. My friends and I eventually like started, we did a band thing. We started playing shows and we were about to do the whole tour thing. And I was doing like a little bit, I started getting into a little bit of session guitar work. And then our, you know, plagiarism stuff happened. My manager ripped off one of my songs that I wrote. And ended up like using it as a title track for his EP. Played it at the Rose Bowl. Yeah, it was like a whole thing.
At the Rose Bowl?
Yeah, and so we were recording this thing. It was supposed to be for Sons of Anarchy for their final season. I was playing a guitar part for it. I am 29. I had to count that. Yeah, 29. Yeah. So long story short, my late teen years were like kind of most people's. I just did things early, so it was like most people's 20s. And then once I kind of figured out that music wasn't it. And I was kind of burned out. I started in the audiovisual industry just because I needed to pay our bills. My wife and I met when I was like 18 and a half, 19, somewhere in there. And we got married when we were 20. Like, just got married. And we're our 9th anniversary was yesterday.
Wow.
9-year anniversary. Yeah. That's so tough. 3 kids, the whole thing. So that's the spiel.
Well, okay. So that's huge. You drop out of high school when you're a sophomore in high school.
Yeah.
Like, why? What happened?
I just didn't. I think actually like that's part of the same reason I dropped out is the same reason that I think I do well in kind of any industry I'm in is like, I like people and respect people based on how they treat other people, not necessarily on who they are on the food pyramid or social scale or whatever. It's like, I don't care if you're very famous or you're the janitor. My pops, like, and my mom, they were both in sales, and they kind of taught me early on, like, you respect people regardless. The whole, like, oh, you earn respect. It's like, no, you respect people regardless. And once you get a sense of their character, you put your guard up, you do whatever you need to do, but you respect them still. And I think high school was the antithesis of that. And I was just so burned out and so tired of, like, just that game of, like, social ugh, that I just left. Like, it had nothing to do with the school load or anything like that. It was just, I was bored. I wanted to make money and, like, just start life. So. Yeah, I think had they let me, I would have left at, like, fifth grade. I was just over it very quickly. But
that's crazy, because me, although I didn't drop out of high school, I kind of have a similar story.
Cool.
In high school, I pursued a lot of things like music and skateboarding. Those were, like, the things that I wanted to do. And so I went through the band thing. We played a bunch of shows.
What do you play?
I play guitar and I was singing.
Okay, sick. Yeah. Oh, you have a voice on you. He has a voice on him.
Hey, I don't want to guess. So we did that, but my plan was actually to drop out senior year to move to LA to go do the drug traffic for some people, partying, all, you know, the rock star shit. So you get to sign a girl's chest once, you can be a big man. Literally, that's kind of like what happened. I remember the show that we played.
No way.
Signed some chest.
No.
Signed her boob. It
was over there. Dude. Mammary glands have ruined more men than anything else in this world. That's wild.
So, yeah, that's nuts. Dude. But I'm kind of the same way. Like, I knew early on what I, like, wanted to do.
Yeah.
The direction I wanted to take, right? That's something else that, like, really hit me. So, your parents, right? They instilled some values in you. But what was it like exiting school at such a young age and then, like, having to live with your parents' house?
Yeah, so lonely. Actually, it was really lonely because it was a really big life lesson that even though I had the ambition, like raw ambition, it had no structure. And so if you have no structure and you have a ton of ambition and you're left to your own devices, you get in a dark place quickly. And I think, like, it's part of my natural gifting is, like, I'm entrepreneurial, I'm ambitious, but now I know how to structure things. So back then it was a big, big lesson in, like, yo, just because you want to do something and you know you'll be good at it, unless you have a plan in place and steps to take, you're gonna just drive yourself insane, like get to a really dark place. And so it was actually really lonely, but I learned very quickly some, like, principles that it's wild, like, that I'm still seeing some of my friends learn now entering their 30s that I kind of had on lock because I was alone, like, kind of just figuring life out. And so I think direction and ambition are one of those, like, those things coupled together are very powerful, but not when you're just alone by yourself. So I think that was a big lesson.
What do you mean by plan in place? So, like, for me and a lot of people that I talk to that are in business or, like, doing content, you know, stuff like that, it's kind of like everybody says just take the leap, just do it and figure it out as you go. So do you mean, like, you're ambitious and you don't have an idea of what you want to do? Is that kind of it? Or do you really mean, like, put the plan together and then go?
I think both are okay if the context is you have a community around you that holds you accountable to just taking care of yourself. They keep an eye on you. And that was one of the bad things that I did after I dropped out, I think, was I kind of just started living, like, a lot of, like, false lives because I was embarrassed. I was like, oh man, like, the rigor lesson was that time goes on no matter what. And so once I hit 17 and I didn't actually do the college thing, and I didn't actually do really the musician thing as hard as I should have, I didn't spend as much time producing or whatever that I wanted to, I realized, like, wow, time is merciless. Time is merciless. And it's a very valuable resource, but if you abuse it, it kills you quickly. And so I think, like, the biggest thing, if I were to tell anybody, is, like, there isn't a set rule of what direction or framework looks like. It's just, do you have a community around you that is flexible enough and loves you enough and knows you enough that you're transparent enough with to be like, hey, right now I don't have a plan, but I'm walking forward. And they're like, all right, cool, like, rah, rah, re, like, go, get after it. But I don't think there is a set. There is a set like framework of like, should I know exactly what I'm going to do and jump in, or should I just take the leap? Like I've had both work in my life. Yeah. It's really just about like, are you being transparent with people and have a community? Because it gets, anything gets very lonely, even success, very lonely, very quickly. So.
That's crazy that you had that kind of insight so young too, that time and the world keeps moving. I have so many friends that like, they've gotten stuck in the party room or whatever. They're like,
yeah.
I'll figure it out. Like this opportunity will still be here. In
yeah.
3 weeks or whatever. And then like the next day. They,
yeah.
They don't understand that the world is going to move with or without you.
Yeah.
You better start like picking up the slack.
For sure. I think on the inverse of that, the people who don't get sucked into it and have success, I think that's why you still see like a midlife crisis happen.
Yeah.
Guys who are 40, 50, they learn kind of the lesson of like time moves, but now they feel like they've missed out. And it's like, that's just wisdom. I can't really, no one will listen if they're in that mindset. But it's like, no, like time is a valuable resource. And once you kind of pick a direction and you have two paths in front of you, that other path dies.
Yeah.
And what that's led me to do now as a, you know, what I'm doing with Podium, like as an entrepreneur, as a father, as a husband, as a leader, knowing that harsh reality actually shapes most of my decisions. Like, I don't even mean that in a cliche, weird, like mystic way. Like, genuinely, that framework of thinking steers most of my decisions.
No, I mean, same actually. So like, I have a gym, I'm getting rid of it, but I realized that it's like not what I want.
Yeah. I didn't know you have a gym.
Yeah, I own a gym.
Is it an affiliate?
It is not. Actually, to be real, I don't really care that much about CrossFit. No,
this
I like to do CrossFit, and I like to talk to CrossFitters.
Yeah.
Because I like the hustle that I like. CrossFit's such a different community.
Yes.
A different type of,
for sure.
You know, yep. It's everything you are. I think something with the mindset is just so appealing.
Yeah, it is a very leapy kind of mentality, I think. Like, even just the workout, like, I'm not a CrossFitter, but when I joined the team at Podium, I knew nothing about it, really. Actually, this is what's crazy. I didn't know that CrossFit was a company at all. Bro, like, I was just like, why do they keep referring to it with, like, a pronoun? Like, what? Like, is there a Captain CrossFit? Is there, like, yeah, dude. And then I learned it was a company. After I joined, because I had to start doing homework, I'm like, wait a second, what? Like, okay, hold on. And then I dove in and learned everything. But yeah, it's even just doing CrossFit workouts now, there is a sense of abandonment to tackle like a workout correctly. I mean, these Metcons are no joke sometimes. And I grew up, like, my grandparents were powerlifters. My dad owned gyms, like managed gyms, like more traditional kind of gyms growing up. So I grew up like powerlifting and bodybuilding and like training for football, just more traditional kind of stuff. Like my 8th birthday, my grandpa got me a tub of protein, like flavorless protein, and a set of dumbbells. And just like, that was my life.
Like, get to it.
Exactly. So I just always thought CrossFit was like, oh, it's a methodology. And sometimes people take it to an extreme, but I had no idea there was a whole affiliate network and like a headquarters and all this, like this whole world about it. I had no idea.
Yeah, I had no idea either. When somebody explained that to me, I was like, everything.
Way more sense. Yeah.
For sure. So, okay. Were your parents down with you dropping out of high school?
No, dude. My dad was, but I think he just kind of, he's a guy. Like, he's like your normal kind of guy. And so he was really smart about this stuff. He's like, look, my son's going to pretty much get to an age in the next year where he's just going to start leaving anyways. I might as well try to set him up for success and kind of like, he took the long road of earning my trust and was like, all right, cool. Let's do it. Like, let's do it.
That's sick.
And my mom, not so much, but she was a little more old school and like, just kind of like, hey, you got to go get your degree. You're smart. Don't waste it. And I was like, yeah, I remember being real young and just thinking like, why do I need a degree to start a business when I could just start a business for cheaper than a degree costs and fail at that 3 times and still have more knowledge? Like, I remember thinking that at a real young age and
probably more money.
Yeah, dude. And most people, I think now, that's becoming very, very accessible as like a conversation with parents. I think now with like the rise of streaming and gaming and Twitch and influencer marketing and content and entertainment, parents are realizing like, oh, you know what? Maybe my kid doesn't need to go to Stanford to get a business marketing degree that's irrelevant 6 days after they leave because of a new Google algorithm.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, yeah.
You know, so.
$300,000 $10 later.
Yeah, I like to think I helped pioneer that somehow. But yeah, my mom wasn't super down with it, but it was out of love. She was just like, she wanted her son to succeed, and I get that, but you know, she's Latina, so she's a little more volatile.
Hispanic?
I mean, I'm quarter. I look like Will Ferrell, but my parents call me Mijo, so.
Yeah, I'm half Mexican.
Sick.
I can get down with the white Hispanic.
Yeah, dude.
All right, well, cool, dude. So when you grow up a little bit, you're like 17, the music thing's done. You said you got into like production.
Yeah, some production and then like videography. I was always just really into art, but I never considered myself like a creative. Or like really any clique. Like I played football, but I wasn't like a jock. Like I surfed, but I wasn't like, oh, Rasta, like, oh, you know, like I was just kind of around. But yeah, I got into some production for music, production for video, and that was kind of like my first business actually. It was on Craigslist. I at the time my dad and I had to move into this house and the whole basement was converted into a music studio. And they had, I mean, I don't mean like a cheesy thing with like Ableton and like a $20 Scarlett mic. I mean, like, it was a studio, dude. Like, yeah, like, no, dude, it was actually like a Cubase software, but it was like, everything was, I mean, it had a full drum set kitted up. It was like, we had like a, I think it was like a 64 channel mixer. Like, the whole thing was dialed, it was soundproofed, it was great. And so I started helping my uncle produce and record some people, and I was like, I should just put an ad on Craigslist. Again, I was lonely. I was at the house all day by myself. I'm like, I need to make some money.
Yeah.
And I don't want to keep working at freaking Starbucks. I had like 36 jobs by the time I was like 20, because I just like, I would go for like 2 weeks and be like, this sucks. Like,
it was, and
it wasn't laziness. It was just like, you guys do things badly. And they're like, you're a barista, shut up. I'm like, that's fair. I just leave. So I posted ads on Craigslist, and I'd record the sketchiest people, like DIY hip hop artists that like, I was making beats and doing, I was just figuring out as I went, but I was like, I think I like owning my own business. This is sick. And so, that was like the production side. And then after that, they're like, hey, do you do creative? Can you do photo? And one of my best friends, who's still my best friend, James Hernandez, he did some content for Podium last year for Waza actually. And it's awesome. But he kind of showed me around how to use a camera and like just basics and principles. And then from there, I was like, cool, I can do my own thing and kind of make money. And so, once I left the entrepreneurship journey to actually like, you know, I got married, I needed to provide, I needed to get a job, and I kind of had some more wisdom of the times passing, so I can go back to entrepreneurship when it's time, but right now I need to pay my bills and make sure my wife feels secure that she married the right guy. So I started just doing like some AV work and like on-site production for the audiovisual industry, and after that kind of started using the creative tools back again once I got the opportunities. When brands were like, hey, we need to run a Facebook ad, we don't know how to do this, I'm like, I'll figure it out, and just started raising my hand, and that's how I got here.
So is that like how you kind of got in the door as an inventor? Is it just like, hey, I'll help you out, figure it out?
100%. So I got an opportunity to work at a warehouse for this company called Rinskit, and it was in 2015, Rinskit. It's out of Carlsbad, California. It's a portable pressurized shower. It hooks up to like a hose spigot, and it keeps that pressure stored in the tank. And so you can take it wherever you want, spray your feet off, whatever. And it was like really big for surf and like mountain bike, like outdoors kind of stuff in Southern California. Made it on Shark Tank, did like a big, like, wasn't GoFundMe, but the other one, whatever. We had a successful campaign on one of those things. And my buddy at the time, like, had to start kind of stepping back a little bit for some personal issues. So I got the opportunity to then manage the warehouse. And after managing the warehouse, I got the opportunity to kind of help run operations more. And then I realized the game is really just, can you outperform anybody who's in front of you? And are you good at being friendly? And if you have those two things, you can conquer the world, dude. Like, if you're able to judge character, have the right friends, and hold them accountable, and be just willing to learn constantly, you'll kill it.
Yeah.
And so I was able to like figure that out early, thank God. And kind of found myself in more roles. So after I left Rinskit, I got picked up by this fishing company, and they're like, hey, we need someone to run e-commerce and we'll pay you more. And I'm like, done. Give me YouTube for 3 days and I'll figure it out. And I did. And again, thank God, because that's like how kind of jump-started me into marketing out of like operations and gave me a real skill set that was more defined.
You got to manage people too and see
how they work. Yeah, and what was important is it taught me to measure everything by revenue output. Like, that was the first time I was like, oh my gosh, I can make more money if I can show that I've tripled revenue and also brought down costs, because my operations background, I'm like, now I know they can pay me more. There's no like, oh, it's not in the numbers. I'm like, no, it's in the numbers, dude. Like, and so I started doing that, and once I left that fishing job, I started my own marketing agency with my wife out of our garage, grew it to 6 employees, and just kept doing the figure it out as you go, but over deliver. I was cold calling people. I was doing whatever it took to just bring money in. And then after the agency, I went to Mary Ruth's, this big vitamin company. They were doing like $375 million a year in sales. And I ran their e-commerce. I was their VP of digital. And that's how I met Paul, who started Podium. That's how I'm here now.
Wow, that's wild. So for anybody listening or watching, not having a degree, not going to high school, is not an excuse. This is a really cool story.
Thanks. I appreciate it.
I have not met somebody that keeps that level of
success. Oh, thanks.
Oh, that's crazy.
I've got gray hairs early. I got city miles. Yeah.
Right. You got that big bank account. It's always.
No, well, I'm also dumping my life savings into chewing gum, so there's that.
Yeah, it's funny because everybody thinks it's glitz and glam, too, you know, maybe entrepreneur or whatever, but it's really like there's so many years, hours, days of muscle, nose, yes, you go through the.
Lots of nose. Yeah.
So, how'd you get involved with Cody?
Yeah, so. The CPG industry, consumer packaged goods. Think.
You're teaching me a lot. Of
yeah, anything from toothpaste to supplements to milk. Like what consumer packaged good makes up a bulk of like grocery. That space is very small actually. So like the people who are killing it at Oatly and all their copy, they know the people at is it Noco? Noco? How do you say that? I've heard it two different ways. Noco. Great. They know the people at Noco who know the people, like, it's incestuous. Like, oh, yeah. Everybody's worked for everybody at some point. 100%. And so I was doing this kind of, like, mastermind meetup with some other guys who were like, oh, like, where did this kid come from? He ran an agency, and now he's working brand side again. I wanted to buy a house as a whole thing. But so I shut down the agency. I saw that there wasn't really legs in selling an agency. Like, how do you value that? It's always contract-based. And our whole shtick was that we didn't do contracts, and I would just keep people happy. I was like, that's unsustainable. I hate it. So I went back brand side, and I met Paul through a mutual friend at a Super Coffee event. So Super Coffee opened a headquarters in Austin.
Oh, Super Coffee.
Super Coffee. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So we went to a Super Coffee event, and I met this guy named Kevin, who, if anyone listening is familiar, it's he ran a brand called KOS, K-O-S. It's like a vegan supplement brand. And he's like, oh, I think a few months after, I was like, I think I'm going to leave Mary Ruth. It's just not my vibe right now. He's like, I want to introduce you to Paul. He needs help with this thing called Podium. And I looked at it and I was like, maybe, I don't know, like how big are they? I wanted to make sure I could provide still and like pay my mortgage. And once I met with him though, I was like, oh shoot, this guy started Ghost. And he was, yeah, Paul started Ghost.
Paul started Ghost.
Paul started Ghost.
So funny story about that. It'll be real quick. You know Ryan at Ghost?
No, not personally. No. Yes. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Okay. So, yeah. I knew him when he was at Valley Corp way back in the day.
I believe Paul got Ryan that job.
Really?
So, Paul was one of the OGs at Cellucor.
Everybody knows everybody.
Everybody knows everybody.
I
believe, I don't know if that's gospel. I'll message you after this to let you know. But Paul brought a lot of people into that Cellucor world who are now, yeah, and then he went and started Ghost after he left Cellucor. I mean, but Paul was behind some of the genius of like the C4 launch and like that whole like licensing flavor thing and like that's him. Like people don't know, he's so good at being in the background, but the dude is like smart and he knows formulas, he knows ingredients, and he's flavor first. And so like that's what convinced me to go to Podium. Was like, oh, this is a real brand. This isn't just some other startup. Yeah.
Yeah, so I met Ryan when he was in DC, dating a really good friend of mine. I went to Vegas with them for a bodybuilding show. Had a good time, came back, but wow, okay.
So yeah, yeah, yeah. Go ahead. Yeah, so once I found out it was like a flavor first company, I was like, okay, that's really important. So there's this metric.
Because you wanted the product to actually be good.
Yes, repeat purchases are what kill brands or make brands. So if you have a brand that's wildly successful at advertising and very good at converting customers, but it doesn't taste good enough to keep garnering repeat purchases on its own,
yeah,
with minimal marketing output, your brand is fake. Like you're gonna play a game basically where you're gonna keep ramping up revenue, you're gonna try to sell, and you're gonna leave someone else with a bag and a nightmare to fix because your product doesn't taste good.
That makes sense.
Shout out most brands. But this brand, I was like, oh my gosh, like it tastes amazing and it has a real community behind it. And wait a second, like I remember when he called me and I first met him, he's like, yeah, you know, my co-founders are the Buttery Bros. They kill it with content, and Matt Fraser. And I was like, who's Matt Fraser? I had no idea.
That's exactly how I was with Matt Fraser too when I first like heard about him. Like, who's this dork?
Yeah. Well, it's like he is actually like one of the coolest guys I've ever met now. Like his house is sick. That's what I'm gonna say. Right, he is a sick guy.
I'm sure.
We blew up a lot of stuff. It was really fun. That's like he's got cool toys. That's what I'm trying to say.
Maybe yeah.
but no, Matt's an amazing guy. The Buttery Bros are sick. And so, but when I joined, I was like, yeah, I need to figure out who these guys are. Again, I didn't know anything about CrossFit. So, but since I've joined, I've kind of taken like all that knowledge from the marketing agency and like how to be scrappy, and then all of the big business side from Mary Ruth's, and I'm kind of combining those two veins now. And so, you know, everyone in this company is putting in an insane amount of work. Like, we are outputting like crazy, but a lot of what we're doing right now is like it's really growing because we all have past like history in this industry, and we've paid our dumb taxes with other brands, and so now we're coming into Podium, and we have like a really good record of like successful campaigns. Like, we mostly hit home runs, and that's like what I kind of keep trying to encourage our team is like, when it's time to reinvent the wheel for certain things, let's be balls to the wall aggressive. But when it's not, it's like, there's a playbook. Let's follow the playbook, yeah, and it will grow. It's a good product. Honestly, it comes down to like, does your product taste good? Is it affordable to your demographic? And are you entertaining? Like, those are the three things that'll make or break you.
So how do Matt Fraser and Buttery Bros get involved?
Mutual friend of Paul. When Podium first started, introduced all of them, and it made sense once they knew Paul's background of like, you know, the biggest thing for like creative partnered brands, like when you're a creator, man, like if you make the wrong partnership and someone labels you as inauthentic, that's a huge risk. And so kudos to them for doing diligence on Paul and being like, okay, who is this guy? Like, we're gonna put our name behind this, and really we want it to be real. We don't want to be like fake, like, I love Podium, and like they're really just not drinking it, and like they don't care, and they're posting. Like, that's a money grab, that's a rug pull, it's NFTs in 2020, you know what I'm saying? And so they all did diligence. Yeah, dude, they all did diligence, and it made sense. They really liked and respected how well educated Paul was around formulas, and once they got together and realized that there was some synergy on the content side and like serving the CrossFit community correctly, and that no brand really built itself within CrossFit to serve CrossFit. A lot of brands stretched into CrossFit, but they didn't put in the effort and diligence to know what they really were going after and how to serve them correctly. They're like, oh, this makes tons of sense. And from there, it's history, and we're doing it now.
How do you serve CrossFit better than other brands?
I think some of it is formulation, like out of the gate. Like, we think about the demand that a Metcon is putting in versus a standard pump session, for instance. And so we led with a really focus-driven high stim pre that is geared towards a 1.5 to 2.5 hour workout where people are really getting after it and they need to rely on a product. And then honestly, like whey, most times it's hard to be innovative. Now that we have certain ingredients like Velocitol in some of our SKUs, like that helps increase protein absorption, and you can use less ingredients so you have a lower caloric impact and higher protein absorption, there's some stuff you can do with that we do pretty well. And then our Hydro Salt is like, there's a reason it's our best seller. It's electrolytes and BCAAs. Like, replenishment is a huge aspect for CrossFit I think a lot of other athletes don't recognize. Like, you're any Metcon, I'm probably losing 5 pounds of sweat, dude. Like, it's brutal. And you're tearing down muscle quickly, and like the next day you're gonna go train again. And so replenishment was a big deal. Well, that's a great question. So we will always serve CrossFit, but we have to do two things. One, keep growing CrossFit, finding ways to show it and represent it correctly through content to where people are realizing that CrossFit's an awesome methodology. Like, and two, beyond that, also expose ourselves to other verticals where it makes sense. So this past year, we signed a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu champion named Fionn Davies. She's a savage. We're tackling that community very well, and we're gonna double down on that next month with some more content.
Similar type of community.
Similar, very diehard, trains every day. Yep. and they're underrepresented. There's no real company that's helping them, really, you know? And so we want to jump into that. And then surf, believe it or not, and like some moto and action sports, yeah. Basically, high demand, high output athletes that don't yet have a really good training story told about them is who we're going after. No, that's a vacation. Okay, yeah, okay. No, that's a vacation.
I don't know if he was doing some market research.
No, but this week we're putting out an offer to a couple names in the surf industry that we're really excited about that we're going to shoot some content around. Yeah, so it's always going to come back to the story of training, though. Like, all of our athletes in every other vertical must have CrossFit methodology in their training program. That's how we're making sure that we are always going to stay authentic. We're not going to just sell out to be the next bodybuilding brand or whatever. That's not us.
That is really authentic. Because, like, if I think of, like, the brands off top of head that, like, I guess selling out, right? Like, Gymshark for me is kind of like, you guys started in the aesthetic bros, like, bodybuilding space, and now they're branching. And not that it's wrong at all that they're branching out. I think that's really good.
Yeah.
But it's almost like nobody knows really what to associate with Gymshark, you know?
For sure. I mean, it's become a TikTok lifestyle brand.
Yeah.
I think authenticity... Yeah, I think how I define authenticity is, first, you have to tell a story, and then, are you sticking to the story? So, if we started telling a different story, people at first would say, that's inauthentic. And then it's like, well, just keep telling it for a little while, and then stick to it, and then now, all of a sudden, 5 years later, it's authentic again.
Yeah.
But we want to make sure that we're always sensitive to, like, we're built from within CrossFit for a reason. This methodology is relatively unstoppable for most other athletes, and so we're trying to combine these worlds as much as we can.
Now when it comes to like selling the product and stuff like that, how important is the content side of it versus like ads?
Oh, it's huge.
Content through like Buttery Bros and YouTube.
Massive. I mean, like, my first job is to get attention. That's our job. We have to get attention. So entertainment. Like, that's why, I don't know when this is dropping, but like, we just filmed with a bunch of gold AK-47s and a Lamborghini and a mansion, and like, we just did this whole shoot for Miami this week. That's absolutely psychotic. Like, I take it personally when people are like, Liquid Death is genius. I'm like, they just don't say no to their marketers. Their marketers have ideas, they don't say no. That's the genius. The genius is in the leadership. But the idea is, I'm like, yeah, it's old lady skateboarding. Jackass did that 10 years ago. Like, it's like, it's funny. Like, I'm not putting him down, but I'm like, I take it personally. I'm hyper competitive. So I'm like, all right, how can I get better attention? Like, how can I, on a smaller budget, be more entertaining?
I'll drop this ASAP.
Yeah, so content is like crucial. And if we're talking like actually marketing like terms, like our cost per acquisition is significantly lower than any other company I've been with in the past, including high grossing companies, because we lead with entertainment first. And we stick to that so authentically that when people see an ad from us, it's a very quick conversion.
Cool.
Yeah, you're earning trust through entertainment. Yeah.
I love it. All right, dude. Well, cool. Tell me a little bit about Buddy. Tell me a little bit about your brand.
Yes. So, savings account gone. But I'm stoked. So, Buddies is kind of the product of, wow, I miss owning my own businesses. I'm really good at marketing and selling things online and in retail. Why am I not doing something on my own, right? And it's like, really, it's because money. Like, it takes a lot of startup funds to really tackle a market correctly. And like, kudos to the brands who are out here this week that I've never heard of before, who have tents in the back and they're hustling. Like, it is hard to start something bootstrapped. And so, luckily I had like a decent little nest egg, and I've been dumping that. It's actually savings from our last business when I shut it down. And so I've been dumping that into building new chewing gum formula. So stick format, same as like Five Gum, same price as Five Gum, just naturally sweetened, nothing like artificial in it. The only thing, like the sugar alcohol we're using is xylitol, which is like a dental one. It makes sense, it's in every chewing gum. We've got three flavors. I own the formulas, and then I made them a little bit like microdosed with active ingredients like electrolytes, vitamin D, ashwagandha, but it's very microdosed. So you have, it's like, if you're already going to chew a gum, why not have it be healthy, still taste phenomenal, and have a little extra bonus that you're not really like, it's not interrupting the flavor. You're just like, oh, there's ashwagandha in this sick.
It's not like those other natural gums though, where the flavor's gone in 3 seconds.
Correct. Right. It's no. Yeah. And so we're
all about the, I try not to eat the stuff with aspartame.
It's tough, dude. Like, our country is flavor led, right? And so Mary Poppins says it best, a little bit of sugar helps the medicine go down. Like, a little bit of sucralose helps you actually meet your macros. Like, we're gonna complain about that. If you're an all natural guy and that's where you live and die, like, fine, cool. Like, not every brand's for you. But for buddies, I wanted to make sure that I could do my best to be as universal as possible, because 50% of the population of the US chews gum. It's like, gum is a kind of a commodity. And so there's three big players in it that are huge global corporate brands, and they own all the brands you can think of. I'm like, well, that's ripe for disruption. Like, there's nothing new in chewing gum. This is a fun story, especially if I sell it conveniently, right? Like, the same price and format as Five or Extra. That way, you're not having to, like, teach people, like, a new format. So there's other functional gums that are, like, hyper-functional, like 150 milligrams of caffeine. Like, that's a lot of caffeine. You're going to have diarrhea on the way home from work. Like, that's a lot.
You have more than one.
You have a heart attack. Yeah, and if a four-year-old kid chews on it, like, what happens then?
Yeah.
And so I wanted to make a universal product, because gum is universal, that met and checked all those boxes. So I own the formulas, and I've dumped my money into now producing it. So the other differentiator is that, like, I will own the factory that produces our stuff. I'm not going through a co-manufacturer.
Oh.
Yeah, we're almost done building it. Almost.
Power moves, dude.
Power moves, yeah. Yeah, thanks.
Sweet, man. Well, hey, I really appreciate you taking the time to sit down with me.
Yeah,
dude.
Podcast.
Plug anything that you want to plug.
I love you, Rachel. That's my wife. I miss you.
That's and awesome too, that you've been married for 20 years.
Yeah.
That's a big decision, so young.
Yeah.
Sweet.
Yeah. Thanks, dude.
Yeah, thanks so much. Like, subscribe, do all that. We'll talk to y'all in the next one.
Sick.